6.5 minutes after 5 o'clock here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Good afternoon. It's time for Spectrum West. I'm Al Ross. Hope you're not superstitious. I'm not. I firmly believe we're going to have a flawless program today, despite the Triskaidekaphobian tendencies looming. We have two more Fridays the 13th coming this year, April and July, so this can be a warm-up. I'm convinced that we are extra lucky today because we have a lineup of guests, including the Middle Spunk Creek Boys, a Hall of Fame bluegrass band, probably get things ready for their 8 o'clock performance tonight at the Old Gem in New Richmond. They've been together since 68. We'll have our usual double shot of Jim Oliver, a listing of what's on stage in West Wisconsin. He'll also share a conversation with the upcoming visits in two of our falls, St. Croix and Chippewa, at the Festival Theater and Heidi Center, respectively, presenting the play Guys and Does, a full perspective on deer hunting. We'll also meet a UW Stout senior, Luis Santiago, is making his way among the trappings between college and the real world. He likes to design things people need and want. He'll graduate soon, but has already had a taste of that real world with the successful creation of an upscale sunglasses design. And the distinction of getting today's ball rolling goes to Dr. Salika Duxworth-Lawton, a professor of history at UW-Eau Claire. As such, she appreciates and communicates the places significant events and people hold as defining ingredients in our country's past. The life of Martin Luther King Jr. is commemorated in America on the third Monday of each January. His assassination on April 4th of 1968 is what makes his place in history a painful and a poignant one. In Eau Claire, the tribute has grown over the years, and this year's will be memorable, musical, and meaningful. As also one of the event coordinators, Dr. Duxworth-Lawton has a keen perspective and appreciation for the colorful collaboration and cooperation that it really is. Live readings of some of Dr. King's most noteworthy speeches, wide-ranging musical numbers, and, of course, the philosophy behind it.
The children are the center of our program. Why have a program if it's not for what we want to transmit to the future? Having the children as a major part of reading King's speeches, I think, has a meaning and an impact even beyond the ordinary. They bring to it a wonder that is just, it's beautiful to see. What is interesting is how relevant the words still are. In the drum major instinct speech, which we're using this year, there's a whole section of how poor whites are left out and why poor whites should work with poor blacks for the betterment of the nation and how the races are divided against each other. The real issue is not race. The real issue is class. I think that's very important for people to hear. People always go, what does Martin Luther King mean to me? Stanley Crouch wrote an article trying to claim that Martin Luther King was only for black people. But clearly from the drum major instinct speech, he was for all people. And he was worried about all people's conditions. And he wanted to see education and employment access for everyone, not just black people. King is essentially hopeful and inclusive. And that's why it's so important for us to reach out and reach out across class and also across race and across religion.
Civil rights, you know, it sounds like an old term because it's tied to a movement that people associate with the past. Mm-hmm. And yet I'm curious as to where you think civil rights stands today. Is there still a civil rights movement?
Yes, there is still a civil rights movement. It depends geographically on where you are. I mean, if you go to New Orleans, people would say, of course, we still need a civil rights movement. If you talk to a middle-class black or an upper-class black, I mean, Beyonce and Jay-Z obviously don't need to be liberated from anything, and Charles Barkley only needs to be liberated from a cheeseburger.
And his golf swing.
And maybe his golf swing. There are also whites who need a civil rights movement. We have seen free speech under attack. Civil rights are not just a minority issue. They are everyone's issue. And we need to have a conversation about where freedom of speech goes, where the Second Amendment right to bear arms goes. What does being secure in your house and your person mean? What power should the government have in order to protect the country but not tread on our civil liberties? Even Justice Scalia has said publicly a couple of weeks ago he has been forced to reassess the 14th Amendment. Oh. And it's the 14th Amendment that binds the Bill of Rights on the states and says that the states cannot violate your right to freedom of speech, cannot violate your right to bear arms, cannot violate your right to be secure in your house. In Louisiana in 1965, the state tried to take guns away from the black deacons, and they saw the civil rights movement as simply the enforcement of the Bill of Rights. When you look at the civil rights movement that way, and that's the way historians see it, and that's the way King saw it, then civil rights are for everyone. I have been surprised at the number of my students who come into my class who don't know the Bill of Rights. And the first time they've been forced to memorize them and been quizzed on them is when they walk into a college-level history class. Mm-hmm. But that's one of our legacies of No Child Left Behind. Once you've read the Ninth Amendment, once you've read the 14th Amendment, it becomes clear what this is. But so many people avoid doing that, they don't really understand how our rights operate in today's life.
Our guest is Dr. Salika Duxworth-Lawton. She's a professor of history at UW-Eau Claire, and we're speaking of, and we will give you the particulars of, the Dr. Martin Luther King Remembrance, which is coming up, of course, on Monday. You teach the appreciation of history. I'm an old, cynical guy now. I question young people's appreciation of history, and I'm asking you about that, because today everything we do is immediate. We don't tend to look backwards. We tend to always look straight ahead and to the future. So is the appreciation of history still something that's prevalent out there and is a strength in young people? Do they want to know more about where we came from?
Some do. Some do. I mean, I've definitely met young people who do. When I worked with the Hank Aaron Project here, and we're bringing in the National Baseball Hall of Fame's Negro Leagues exhibit in May, and the excitement around that has just been amazing. Mm-hmm. Students have wanted to work on that. When we did Hank Aaron, students came out the woodwork.
That's sports now.
That is sports history. So
and I understand having to put something appealing on the plate.
My military history class is always run full.
Okay, well.
I've got a lot of students who appreciate military history. They especially want to learn about Vietnam and World War II because they do see a relation of that to today. There's always been a group that sees history as having no purpose. Everything should move forward. But I think that among some of the more curious younger people, they're hearing these historical references and they want to know where they're coming from. When I was searching the web to see what video and what audio of King's speeches were out there, I was amazed by the number of projects students had put up where they had taken King's words and put them to music. It ranged from U2 to Jay-Z to just background beats. Mm-hmm. Clearly engaging the words and seeing them as a part of a newer culture. There are some people who are very interested. More often than not, they do show interest.
It would be so interesting to see what the man would be like and how his movement would have, what courses it would have taken had he lived.
If he had lived, I think we would have seen a more multiracial movement. His movement was very middle class. His movement believed in a certain set of shared values for America. So he was struggling with that, but I think we wouldn't have seen the movement stall in 1975. I think we probably wouldn't see some of the fighting between business and unions today because it was clear he was already beginning to try to mediate that. Mm-hmm. So some of the problems we have today, the movement would have addressed earlier on. America is the only nation that has integrated without force. Mm-hmm. Almost every other nation has had armed struggle. King calls for peace. So we are unique.
I should actually go back to school, because this is fascinating for me. But we should probably move on to the remembrance mm-hmm. itself, which is Monday, and that's mm-hmm. Martin Luther King Day. But I'm curious because there's a lot of stuff going on, and mm-hmm. I'm wondering how much of you is in this remembrance.
How much of me?
Your personality within this?
There's a little bit of it. I'm eclectic.
Good.
And I'd say the music follows that. We have James Taylor's Shed a Little Light. We have Queens, as in the band Queen.
Yes.
One Vision, Sly and the Family Stone, Everyday People. Mavis Staples, Staple Singers, I'll Take You There. We have the University Lutheran Klezmers playing Negro Spirituals. And the thread holding the music together is celebrating King and celebrating bringing us together. Just coordinating the readers is an adventure. We have representatives from Stout. We have representatives from Chippewa Valley Technical College, as well as from the university, as well as from three different schools in Eau Claire. There's a term in sociology called an organic intellectual. An organic intellectual doesn't worry about having a leadership name. They see what needs to be done. They do it. They don't need accolades for doing it. And that's how you got a civil rights movement. We have a bunch of organic leaders running around this program, and I am massively grateful for that. So they're wonderful.
Dr. Salika Duxworth Lawton. The Martin Luther King Remembrance is Monday, 6 p.m. at St. James the Greater Church on 11th Street in Eau Claire. It's a collaboration of people and sponsors gathering in the spirit that King would be proud to witness. 17 minutes after 5 o'clock on Spectrum West.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from Wisconsin Credit Union, offering online and phone loan applications for student loans, consolidation, vehicles, a line of credit, and more. Information online at wisconsincu.org.
Thank you so much for joining us here on Spectrum West. Takes a lot of guts to be out and about on Friday the 13th. Well, maybe not. It's the big Eau Claire Ragtime Festival this weekend. Lots to do, see, and hear. You can go to ecragtime.org for a full lineup. Remember, the Chippewa Valley Habitat for Humanity is the beneficiary. It's Hey Nunny Nunny tomorrow night at the Heidi Center in Chippewa Falls, and on Sunday it's illusionist Tristan Christ, 2 p.m. Go to cvca.net. Call 726-9000 for more information. Door County, Wisconsin is known for many things, including attracting Illinois license plates in the summer. One strength is theater, with several successful companies in operation, one of which is coming for a visit. Here's Jim Oliver with that story.
Guys and Does, an American folklore theater touring musical production, will make two stops in western Wisconsin next week. We'll play next Monday and Tuesday at the Festival Theater in St. Croix Falls, and on Thursday at the Heidi Center for the Arts in Chippewa Falls. Frederick Heidi and Lee Becker wrote the show with music by Paul Libman. Joining us by telephone from Door County, the home of the American Folklore Theater, is one of the writers, Lee Becker, who is also in the cast. So I certainly appreciate your coming on to talk to us.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Jim.
So let's get started and just talk about the show.
Doc Heidi, who's one of the founders of American Folklore Theater, and I have written several shows for the company, and for the longest time, he's wanted to write a deer hunting show. And in fact, some of your listeners may be familiar with Guys on Ice, which is a show that the company originated now 15 years, give or take. But a deer hunting show has been in the offing for a while, and so we started working on it in about 07. And the show takes place at a hunting cabin way up north in Wisconsin. The main hunters that we follow are a couple of guys who work at an Akusa paper mill, good old Wisconsin trade. And they head up north. Fritz Dingelheimer is the main hunter. He represents sort of the master ethical hunter who we would all like to imagine all hunters are, and who has been hunting for so long now that he mostly it's just a getaway for him. He's really looking forward to taking a break from his job at the mill, and he's got a marriage of many decades that's just plugging along, but it's kind of hit a bit of a rut. It's just routine. There's nothing particularly exciting in Fritz's life anymore, and he brings along this guy. I play the character of Dwayne Puddles, who is not a hunter, but who is dating Fritz's daughter, and Fritz's daughter has lined it up so that I'm going to go along on this hunt with Fritz, hoping that the two fellas will find some common ground, because I'm hoping to get Fritz's permission to propose to his daughter by the end of the show. But my character, Dwayne, who's definitely not a hunter, is sort of the opposite of most of the guys you think of going up hunting. He doesn't drink beer. He doesn't watch the Packers. His favorite hobby is knitting. He grew up with his mom, but without a father to really indoctrinate him into the male culture. So he's a bit of an oddball. He went hunting once when he was in high school, and it led to a catastrophe that turns out to be the butt of some humor in the show. But Fritz is a good guy, and he loves his daughter, so he brings Dwayne along and does his best to try to explain hunting to him. And Dwayne sings a big song about how he was scarred by watching the movie Bambi as a child. And so he doesn't think he's going to really be able to do this, and Fritz assures him that if he doesn't kill a deer, it's okay. And so they're starting to sort of find some common ground, and then there's a knock on the cabin door, and we get a third hunter entering the scene. This guy is named Joe Jimmy Ray Bob Johnson III. He's a Texas big game hunter who's all about just killing one of everything that walks, crawls, or flies on the earth. And so he shows up. He's tracking a magical white deer. We learn that there's this white buck with golden horns that's been seen in the forest. And soon we actually meet that character. And, in fact, it's a pretty fun bit of double casting. A wonderful actor we have in the theater here, Doug Mancheski, who's one of the guys on ice. Anybody that saw that show will remember him. He plays both the Texas big game hunter and he plays our mystical white talking deer. So he shows up at one point and reveals that he's toward the end of his days, and he hears there's a white doe that lives in these woods that's the last female of his kind. So he is he's looking for her for the obvious reasons any male deer would be on the hunt for a doe. And so we have all the different kinds of hunting represented. We have a hunter who does it right. We have a hunter who's maybe not quite so much of a model of a good hunter, and then we have a character who's not a hunter at all, and then we actually get the deer weighing in, too, on what their viewpoint is on hunting. So we really wanted to explore the theme of hunting from as many viewpoints as we could.
Now, one would infer from the fact that you wrote this tale about mm-hmm. deer hunting that you are an active deer hunter yourself, but I learned that you really aren't, are you?
No, that is not true. Although, the interesting thing, it was pretty easy for me to get into the mindset of my character in writing it and performing it, since I don't come from a hunting background. My father was not a hunter, although many of his brothers and brothers-in-law are big-time hunters. And, in fact, we interviewed a couple of my uncles and one of my cousins, as well as some other deer hunters up here in Door County, because we really wanted the show to have a lot of authentic hunting information. We did a lot of research, and we've had a lot of hunters see the show and give it their seal of approval, because we wanted to take the theme of hunting seriously in spite of the fact that we ourselves aren't hunters.
He is Lee Becker, who is co-writer of Guys and Does, a musical production that will be playing next week at the Festival Theater in St. Croix Falls and also at the Heide Center for the Arts in Chippewa Falls. We'll talk a little bit about the music in the show.
The music was written, the melody's composed by a composer who's worked for our theater on a number of different shows, a gentleman by the name of Paul Libman. And anybody who's familiar with American Folklore Theater may have seen some of his other composition shows. Cheeseheads, the musical, he wrote the music for a show called Musky Love, which has been a big hit for us, a show called Main Traveled Roads. He's a fantastic composer, very, very quick turnaround. We would submit lyrics to him, and we would get something back in a day. His background, actually, was writing advertising jingles in the Chicago market for many years. And writing the songs, Doc Heide and I both collaborated on the lyrics and then just turned the words over to Paul, and then he would come up with melodies. And it's a lot of fun. As I was referencing earlier, a song I sing called I Can't Kill Bambi's Brother, which turns into this sort of mock tragic opera, which is really fun. And then toward the end of the show, we have a big sort of gospel number. There's a lot of different kinds of music in the show. There's some pretty ballads. There's some pretty funny anthems. There's a real rousing song called Huntin' Day that we sing the first morning of the hunt. And it's got some really catchy tunes.
The American Folklore Theater has been around since, I believe, 1970?
The history of the company, the American Folklore Theater itself just celebrated its 20th anniversary a couple years back. It sprung out of something called the Heritage Ensemble, which did, yes, start back in 1970-71.
Mm-hmm. They perform in Peninsula State Park in Door County.
Mm-hmm. That's our summer venue, a beautiful outdoor amphitheater in the falls. Lately, we've been going into the Door Community Auditorium in Fish Creek, and then also now this year traveling around the state.
So how long have you been with the company?
I started in 1994, and with the exception of a few summers here and there, I've been working in Door County in the summers pretty much every summer. I've also done some work with Dorr Shakespeare, which is a theater company that actually also had its beginnings with American Folklore Theater.
So what keeps you there?
You know, I think the thing that really struck me as a performer when I started working with AFT was its fan base. The families that have been coming now for generations, literally people are bringing their children to see our shows who were themselves children the first time they were brought to see our shows. It's become, you know, there's an ownership of the company that the fans have that I liken to how Wisconsinites talk about the Packers. They really identify with them as their team. They have a real personal connection. And people that come see our shows in Door County, for many of our fans, they don't see any other live theater. They don't go to see other theater companies. And yet they'll come and see our company. And more than that, they'll come specifically to see what we're doing that's new, that's never been done before. We, as often as possible, try to have a world premiere show every summer. And you will find in a lot of theater markets, people tend to only want to see what they know has already been a hit somewhere else, whereas our crowd, they want to see the new thing. They want to see something that's never been done before, and that's really special. And I think that's, you know, their support of us and seeing, you know, having kids come up after the shows and asking us to sign their playbills and things like that, and the support that we have, I think, is really one of the things that that keeps me coming back. That and the fact that it's an unusual theater company. There aren't many in the country, and I think we might be the largest theater company in America that performs nothing but original pieces of musical theater that the company generates itself.
Well, you've been visiting with Lee Becker, who is co-writer and a member of the cast of Guys and Does, a musical production of the American Folklore Theater of Door County. The show will play next Monday and Tuesday at the Festival Theater in St. Croix Falls and Thursday at the Heide Center for the Arts in Chippewa Falls. Well, thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, it's been a real pleasure. We really look forward to taking the show up into that neck of the woods. We've been selling out up in Door County all the time, so we are really thrilled now to bring this out to folks around the state. I think they'll really have a good time.
Jim Oliver. A little more than a minute away from news. Spectrum Memo for you. The popular improv workshop consisting of 8 sessions begins January 22nd at the Eau Claire Regional Arts Center. For info, go to ben@eauclairearts.com or call 715-832-2787. There's a student art exhibit at the Northern Lakes Center for the Arts in Amory, and the exhibit will be up through the end of January. Plus, tomorrow evening, there's a writer's forum featuring stories, poems, and essays read by the authors. That's 7:30 tomorrow evening. Information at 268-6811. Most of the phone numbers we give you are 715 area codes, so if it's anything else, we'll let you know. After the news here on Spectrum West, we'll meet the Middle Spunk Creek Boys via a conversation with one of the founders who brought them together 44 years ago. And they're in New Richmond tonight. Jim Oliver returns for his second installment, which is a look at current theater productions in our wide and now white Western Badger State territory, and a youngster who has some designer sunglasses under his belt. Actually, a young man. Looking forward to more excitement after his approaching UW Stout graduation. We'll be back after the news. Welcome back, everyone, to Spectrum West here on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Al Ross. So nice of you to join us. Hope your Friday the 13th is smooth. Coming up, a UW Stout senior with original designing sunglasses and hopefully shoes in his future. Jim Oliver provides a look at theaters to go and productions to see. But first, I think it's time to say howdy to the Middle Spunk Creek Boys. They've been playing and singing together for a long time. Tonight, they're at the Old Gem Theater in New Richmond. And if I live just a bit closer to New Richmond, I would be there. If you live within shouting distance, I suggest you treat yourself. It should be fun. One of the founding fathers is Al Jesperson. He took time out from his antique business to chew the fat with me. And here's a suggestion. Think David Crosby while listening. We began by talking about the name. Supposedly, there's a rest stop along I-94 near St. Cloud. The name, of course, the Middle Spunk Creek Boys. Here he is.
There are a couple of lakes up there called Upper Spunk and Lower Spunk, and then the creek that drains them. It's called Middle Spunk Creek, and it runs across Interstate 94. And so there's a rest stop there. So I always say every time I drive by there and I go into the rest stop, I leave a little of myself behind.
Literally. So yeah. You guys are Hall of Fame guys in Minnesota, and you've been around since '68 doing this. I have to give a wow to that.
Yeah, we're the oldest functioning bluegrass band in this area for sure.
Well, have you looked into nationally? I would think you're up there.
Perhaps. Yeah,
you should.
We were probably the second band to do Country Roads in 1971. I went to Bean Blossom, and then my wife and I drove to Boston to see a friend of hers, and Joe Val just happened to be playing at the old Club 47 the night we were there. And so I took my tape recorder down there, and they did Country Roads. And so I hauled that back to Minneapolis, and we started doing it right away before anybody had ever even thought of it.
Well, I know that individuals in the band have changed since then, but how has the band changed since way back then?
Well, way back then, and like I said, in the early 70s, we were playing like 100 nights a year at that time.
Hmm.
We started playing at Delano's Pizza in 1971. That's the oldest bluegrass joint in the world.
And you're still there.
And we're still there. You know, Hot Rice has played there. Laurie Lewis has played there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's mostly local bands, but we get a huge crowd, and it's kind of the center of the universe here.
Where is it physically located?
It's at 607 West Lake Street in Minneapolis, Lindale and Lake.
Was it tough to keep true to your bluegrass roots, or was that easy over the years?
Well, the thing was that we were, our band is always, we've occasionally thought of ourselves as a folk group with a banjo. You know, we would do Ian and Sylvia songs, and we did, you know, Grateful Dead and all that kind of stuff.
Hmm.
We were kind of avant-garde in one sense, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we still played bluegrass stuff, but we also came up with our own variations on a theme. Right now we're doing a pretty hot version of the Cole Porter tune, Miss Otis Regrets, you know.
Uh-huh.
I would say we have not tried to maintain a sound. We always have let whoever's in the band do whatever they want to.
Mm-hmm.
So we've had lots of very interesting stuff.
That keeps everybody happy, too.
Well, yeah, you know, and we didn't want to be called, you know, Joe Blow and the Middle Spunk Creek Boys. We always just wanted to be a band. But we have always tried to reflect, you know, and tried to just go with, well, you know, play to your strengths.
You're still around, so you must be playing successfully to that strength.
Well, yeah, and the other thing that we try to do, and I think this is really important, is we try to entertain.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, I read the, sorry if you're interrupting, but I read the sure. The release, and that was my question. Bluegrass speaks for itself, but what about that witty stage banter that I read about?
Well, that was, you know, back in the bad old days in the mid-60s, of course, we listened to the Dillards, right?
Okay.
And they've got a live album with Mitch Jane, you know, being the comedian in between songs. And that was always what appealed to us, and that's really what got us our first booking at the Scholar. We played an open stage, and they liked us because we were funny and entertaining, not necessarily proficient musicians, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's always been the deal, is if you can make the band laugh, then you've found something.
Who cares about the audience? As long as
I mean, the audience will laugh at a lot of stuff. You
yeah,
know,
I know, I understand.
To come up with something that makes the band laugh, that's the gem.
Mm-hmm. This guy is Alan Jesperson. He is a member of the Middle Spunk Creek Boys. They're coming to the Old Gem Theater in New Richmond tonight at 8 o'clock. How about the music that you play? Is it mostly original stuff, some original stuff? What's your repertoire?
We have done original stuff in the past. We have a couple of albums with a bunch of original material on it, but that gentleman is no longer in the band, so we're really not doing that material. We tend to play stuff that not everybody else does, but we also grab from other genres and make it our own. Right now we're doing a Tom Waits tune, which is really great, you know. We take music from other genres and
yeah.
work it up in our own style. Yeah, we, you know, our mandolin player plays the William Tell Overture on demand, and I don't think we're really trapped by bluegrass.
So you guys really are high tech. You know, there's video on demand, but you said there's the William Tell Overture on demand.
Yeah, right, exactly. For a bunch of old guys, we're pretty hip.
Are you? I can tell.
We're just up there, and we're having a great time. And we may not look like we're having a great time. I think the smile on this person is Janine, but we've got Jim Tardoff on banjo, and he used to play in a jazz band called the Wolverines. Ken Sherman is a classical violinist who actually knows how to play fiddle, you know, and he's real very steeped in the bluegrass. And Bruce Jaeger knows every note, every place on the mandolin, and can do the cross picking and do all the cool stuff. We have a pretty accomplished lead department. But yeah, I think we're fun to watch. If you go to YouTube, there are really only two things on there. One of them is pretty weird, and the other one is talking about stage presence and stuff. That's something we're kind of known for.
Yeah, how cool is that? The Janine, by the way, he referred to as Janine Kemmer, the bass player. Their motto is "Dare to be okie dokie." The Middle Spunk Creek Boys, live and in person, 8 o'clock tonight, Old Gem Theater, New Richmond. Go have some Friday fish and then let the guys from the creek kick off your weekend. And you know, here they are with Never Love Nobody But You, live at Delano's Pizza. Middle Spunk Creek Boys, yee-haw.
I'll never love anybody but you, baby.
Say they have a lot of fun. Middle Spunk Creek Boys live at Delano's Pizza, Minneapolis. They're in, as I said, New Richmond tonight, the Old Gem Theater. They're called boys, of course, even though there's a woman in the band. I like that kind of PC mockery, don't you? It's coming up on 14 minutes before 6 o'clock, 5:46 p.m. I'm Al Ross. This is Spectrum West. Thanks for being here. Time to check up on what curtains are rising. Here again is Jim Oliver.
Here's what's on stage this weekend and beyond at Western Wisconsin theater venues. The 33rd season of the Barron Spotlighters opens Thursday with Death by Golf, which continues with performances Friday and Saturday at the Barron Area Community Center. The Diary of Anne Frank, produced by the Falls Players, plays next Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at the Lunda Theater in Black River Falls. Guys and Does, a production of the American Folklore Theater of Door County, will play Monday and Tuesday at the Festival Theater in St. Croix Falls and Thursday at the Heide Center for the Arts in Chippewa Falls. The Phipps Center for the Arts will present Radio Days next Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at the Phipps in Hudson. Excalibur will be presented by Community Arts of Fall Creek next Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at the State Theater in Eau Claire. Nunset Boulevard, the seventh in the Nunsense series of musicals, plays tonight, Saturday, and Sunday, and continues next Thursday through Sunday at the Chippewa Valley Theater Guild's Grand Little Theater in Eau Claire. Click, Clack, Moo, Moo, Cows That Type runs tonight and Saturday at the Eau Claire Children's Theater. The Children's Theater will open Bingo the Musical next Friday at the Oxford. The show will run through Sunday and continue the following Friday and Saturday. And A Very Rudiful Christmas concludes its run with performances tonight and Saturday at the Fanny Hill Dinner Theater in Eau Claire. And that's some of what's happening in theaters around the region. I'm Jim Oliver.
Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include Menominee Street Dental in Eau Claire, offering personalized restorative and cosmetic dentistry for individuals and families throughout the Chippewa Valley. More information is available at msdsmile.com.
Spectrum West on Friday the 13th. I think it's a lucky day. The Janet Carson Gallery at the Eau Claire Regional Arts Center is featuring an exhibit by UW Eau Claire Professor Jason Lanka, UW Eau Claire grad Kathleen Seitz, too. Multimedia and performance art up through February 17th. There is an artist's reception next Thursday from 6 to 7:30 p.m. Luis Santiago is from Maple Grove, Minnesota. He's a senior at UW-Stout, majoring in art with a concentration on industrial design. He's received some ink lately for a design of his that's being used in the fashion world, a design within a line of sunglasses featured on the Coco and Breezy website. His motif is labeled Rainy Days. They were modeled during Fashion Week in New York City in September, by the way. The attention has given him the indication that he probably was smart to listen to his inner voice, one that started saying specific things a few years back.
It started back in high school. I wanted to be a shoe designer. I figured out what I had to do that, and that happened to be industrial design.
Did you imagine things that you could do with shoes?
I mean, I love shoes, the aesthetic of the shoe. Mm-hmm. I'm really into, like, Nike, Adidas. I don't know, just a big, like, sneakerhead, I guess you could call it. And so that just really intrigued me, and I wanted to do that as a career, and I still do. From there, I did some research on where I needed to go to school and what I needed to do. And I looked at a couple of different schools out of state, but they were pretty expensive. But I saw that Stout had a good program, and it was relatively inexpensive. We got the reciprocity, so it was a good deal.
Have you been learning the kinds of stuff that you're going to need to become that shoe guy in the future?
I have. The work world is a little different than school, but I think before coming in, I didn't really have an idea of what industrial design was and what it all entailed. And coming into school, you get a bigger picture of everything that goes into the design process, from doing research to doing sketching to picking out materials, doing final models and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
That all can apply to the shoe industry, I guess you could say.
What kind of specific classes does a person involved in industrial design have to take?
Starting out freshman year, you do basic classes, so they call it foundation, so like drawing, where you're drawing with like charcoal and different pencils.
Mm-hmm.
And like 2D design, and then you're on the 3D design, working with 3D forms and three-dimensional forms. And then going into your sophomore, you start industrial design classes, and you get to learn like the design process that you would do in the real world. So going from like doing research on a problem, and then designing around that problem, and then figuring out a final solution for that problem.
And then later on, you just embellish all that stuff?
Yeah, and then later on, as you get into your later years, the classes get harder. The school brings in like companies that we work with. And then going into senior year, you do 2 senior thesis shows. So one each semester on one big project that you do the whole semester. So.
Mm-hmm. The release that I read mentioned the term the umbrella as an art form. Tell me about that. What's fascinating to you about that?
Well, when I was doing research on what I wanted to do for these classes, I was just looking at different forms, and I don't know if I was watching something or looking at something, but I saw the umbrella, and I really liked the arches from the base of the umbrella, and I don't know, it just really intrigued me. so I decided to design around that. And then the girls' like design aesthetic was kind of, they have kind of like this wild, like out there kind of punk rockish style. So I thought I could adapt that form into their style.
Our guest is Luis Santiago, a senior at UW Stout. He's an art major with a concentration on industrial design. We became aware of him through a release that mentioned that some sunglasses that he designed have been getting some pretty big notoriety. So that's what we're chatting about, and we're getting a little bit of a background on Luis and what he has done in the past and what he hopes to do in the future. I did visit the Coco and Breezy website. Compared to some of the others, at that site, your designs are rather tame. I read that you're working on some other prototypes. What can we expect from Luis in the future if you're going to continue working with those folks?
Yeah. As of right now, I'm not 100% sure as of what's going to come. I'm going to be working with the girls more on seeing what they want and getting them a lot more involved in the design process. With that that frame I did, it was kind of a first step for them. They were doing something different where they would customize glasses, and then they brought me in to have their own frame so they could get into production and kind of build the company up. For the future, I'm not 100% sure right now. Just expect some good stuff, hopefully, if I keep working with them.
Tell us about the process of product design. I mean, does it start with just one little spark? Or a need for some product that's looking for development? I mean, I know it is competitive, so tell me how does the idea start and then blossom?
It all depends. Like with what I did with these glasses, it was more of an aesthetic thing and a fashion thing. Mm-hmm. So there wasn't a whole lot of like problem research in it. Whereas if you're designing, say, some kind of medical device,
sure,
you gotta have a lot of background research and field research on what the problem is, and then you design around that problem based on things that you saw in your research.
Yeah, that makes sense.
With the glasses, it was more of what can make a lasting impression and what looks good for the fashion world.
Do you think you have right now, or do you think it's important to develop a style that becomes recognizable as being your own?
Yeah, that's very important, especially when there's a lot of designers out there, and industrial design is growing rapidly. So having your own style is definitely something to have, more so behind the scenes, so like with your sketching and with your rendering, rather than like your final product. Because a lot of designers work for either a company or they work for a firm, and being a designer, like a big-time designer, is not something a whole lot of people do. So having like a sketching style or a rendering style that can set you apart can really get you far.
A little bit ago, you mentioned the term real world. You've had your taste of it a little bit through the revelation of these glasses. What's the difference between, you know, what you're trying to do in college and the real world? And is Stout doing a good job preparing you for that real world?
Yeah, Stout does a great job doing that. I think with school is just a little different because, for the most part, you make up the project. You're not actually designing for a company or anything. It's just more of like for the grade or for your teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess ultimately for your portfolio. But in school, you go through the whole design process, so from research all the way through the final product. Whereas in the real world, I may not be doing research, or I may not be building a final model. I might be just sketching and rendering, or I might be just doing research on something. So in the real world, the steps, I guess, change. Like with the glasses, I didn't make the final model. We had it produced, or even the prototypes we had produced somewhere else.
You had to do kind of a 3D thing, though, didn't you?
Yep. I made a 3D CAD model, and then we sent that off.
I can see where, you know, a person has worked hard to become something and to educate himself. I can see where it would be enticing to have, you know, a piece of your work recognized, and then, you know, you're flown out to New York and you have to look at these things on the runway and stuff. You know, I can see where a person would get caught up in that kind of whirlwind and say, man, you know, I can make a lot of money doing this. And the tough part would be for me to think about making sure within that whole whirlwind you are maintaining a good perspective on things. In other words, you're not losing, you know, the application of fine art, and you're using what you've learned. You know, it's like a college football player suddenly deciding to jump to the NFL, you know?
Yeah, definitely. It feels like that. Like when I went out to New York, I was like, whoa, this is crazy. But I don't know. It's just a start, I guess. I still have a lot to learn. I can get a lot better. I have friends here at Stout that are really good, I think even better than I am, and they're doing big things. I just happened to get a break, had a chance to design something for somebody. So I don't know. You got to stay humble and just know that there's people out there going after it just as hard as you are.
Well, it sounds like you have a real good, healthy perspective on everything. Thanks, man. Be sure to remember Wisconsin Public Radio when you get to be real famous and give us an interview then, too. Will you?
Most definitely. Anytime.
All right. Good luck.
Thanks.
There you go. Smart guy. Luis Santiago, UW Stout Senior. Good luck to him. To see his work, you can go to Coco and Breezy. That's COCO, Coco and Breezy.com. Again, his designs are in the rainy days section. Got to play a little of this because Sunday at the Mabel Tainter, it's the April Virch Band. We've talked to April on Spectrum West before. It's at 7 o'clock Sunday evening. Tickets at 235-0001 and at MabelTainter.org. You can go over there just to celebrate a Packer victory. Well, I see by the timer that this Spectrum West strudel is done. We'll bake another next Friday, same time, same stations. Thanks to Ellen Zamaripa for promotional assistance, to Jim Oliver for his usual generosity. Next week we'll talk about the therapeutic side of textile art, more about hanging on to books, and who knows what else and who else will pop up and pop in between now and then. Go Packers, and have a nice weekend, everybody.